Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to talk about some of the quite curious inner politics of the SS camp system during the 1930s. I'm going to look at the edicts handed down by Heinrich Himmler and Theodor Eich, who was the commandant of Dachau, and then later had wider responsibility for the camp system in itself. And some of the primary sources we're going to see today run contrary to what we would imagine being written by Himmler. But there is, I believe, an explanation to it. Today I'm going to look at Nicholas Vachmann's brilliant book, KL, A History of the Nazi Concentration Camps. He writes, "When Heinrich Himmler fantasized about his political soldiers, there was one virtue he prized above all, decency. Among all the commandments he issued, and there were many, this was paramount. However brutal the fight against the enemy, his men had to remember that they were fighting for the greater German good, not for personal gain or pleasure. Speaking to the SS leaders in 1938, Himmler insisted that sadism towards prisoners was just as wrong as compassion. To be hard without being cruel was the guiding principle. Himmler's call for propriety was echoed in SS camp orders. As early as October 1933, Theodor Eich, only a few months into his reign as Dachau commandant, instructed his guards that any maltreatment or chicanery of prisoners was strictly forbidden. Other SS commandants followed suit. Later on, SS guards were even required to sign a written declaration that they would not lay a hand on any opponent of the state. Disobedient camp SS men were threatened with sanctions. In March 1937, Theodor Eich warned in a newsletter that Himmler might expel guards for the least maltreatment, box on the ear, in brackets, of inmates. Just a few months later, another newsletter carried this stunning announcement. SS Oberscharführer Zeidler in the Sachsenhausen concentration camp has, because of his sadistic tastes, beaten a prisoner in the most vile manner. He was reduced to the rank of SS man, permanently expelled from the SS, and handed over to the criminal judge. This case is being made known as a warning example." So, this seems strange. Heinrich Himmler, who is not normally associated with compassion towards prisoners or any kind of morality as we understand it, seems to have believed in this notion of decency. Well, let's unpack it. It seems unlikely that Himmler believed in the kind of broadly accepted notions of decency as most members of civil society would understand it. Himmler here seems to have been more concerned with order. What he didn't want was thuggishness. If there was to be punishment, it was to be meticulous and almost scientifically administrated. As I've said in previous podcasts, Himmler's view of the camp system is that it was a kind of a corrective. It was a school, really, for wayward people who had not embraced what he saw as being proper German values. The camp system was really a factory in which your raw material went in at one end and the finished product, a good, obedient German Aryan citizen, came out at the other with notions such as socialism beaten out of them, or, as Himmler liked to think, worked and educated out of them. As it says in that passage, the SS were working towards some greater German good, some kind of utopian goal, the reforging of society. A great deal of the camp men initially, the camp guards, had been SA men, and they, after 1934, this fundamentally changed. Either the camp guards fell under the auspices of the SS, or they were replaced by SS men. And I believe one of Himmler's motivations here was also to remove the culture of the SA, the culture of the ill-disciplined brawler and thug, from the camp system and replace it with a more disciplined regime. Now, we should not assume for a moment that there was anything like the kind of humane values that we might expect in a democratic society. Certainly not. The camps were harsh and brutal places. But what Himmler did not want was grassroots initiatives in punishment. He did not want camp guards coming up with their own sadistic tortures and punishments for the inmates. Instead, there was a long and lengthy training procedure in how inmates should be disciplined, and it needed to be adhered to rigidly. So this is really, these edicts were more about the centralisation of the camp system. If you've listened to any of the previous podcasts I've done on the Nazi camps really emerge from chaos, and it is Himmler who places a kind of a greater centrally administered order on them later in the 1930s. All camps were issued with a catalogue of punishments, and these were modelled on the torments and punishments and sanctions that had been created at Dachau. In each camp, it was only the camp commandant that was allowed to authorise punishments. If guards saw any kind of breach of the rules, they would be responsible not for administering punishment on the spot, but for sending a message up the chain of command to find from the commandant what the appropriate course of action would be. Brutal punishments like flogging, for example, had to gain authorisation from the central administration for the camps in Berlin. Flogging was very popular amongst the SS men. It had all sorts of resonances and symbolism with the practice of slavery, and it was something that the SS men found it was easier on their knuckles than to actually beat with their bare fists. In Dachau, for example, SS men who were commanded by Commandant Wackerl would stage beatings of new prisoners, who would then be pulled off the vehicle that they had been brought to the camp in, a lorry or what have you, held over a table, and whipped until flogged. This was obviously before the formalisation of Himmler's punishments. Much of the flogging happened behind closed doors. In films about Nazi Germany, we're often shown punishment happening in front of prisoners, and certainly this did happen, but in a majority of cases, the prisoner was punished out of the view of his fellow inmates. On the occasions where the punishment would happen in the roll call square, the victim would be humiliated and shamed, and the other prisoners would be intimidated. Sadly, these acts of sadism witnessed by the rest of the prisoners didn't result in a sense of solidarity amongst the inmates. Instead, it has the desired effect of making them all more fearful of being singled out themselves and less likely to stick together against impossible odds. These were the kinds of punishments that were codified into Himmler's regulations. These were seen as the sort of the decent sorts of punishments. Inmates, for example, who were disciplined at Buchenwald were whipped on the behind until the blood flowed down their legs, and in some cases the canes for whipping them with actually broke. Actual punishment in terms of beating and flogging was only one side of the methods by which the Nazi regime tried to discipline or break prisoners. The use of labour and the use of reduced rations and detention in penal blocks was also employed. But what seems interesting is the complex bureaucracy that went into punishment. Before prisoners were punished, reports were written, forms were signed off, and authorisation was sought at as high a level as possible. And again, there is a logic to this which is germane to Nazism itself, in that the camp system, like Nazi Germany, had to be carefully controlled by the regime in order to prevent chaos. The camp administrators and Himmler himself were obsessed by the possibility of disorder, and in the minds of people like Himmler, the failings of Germany, the problems of Germany from the First World War onwards, and certainly the years of disorder during the Weimar Republic, were directly attributable to a lack of order. And the
flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Camp system, if it had a point, was there to reinstill it, and therefore it could not be chaotic. It was in the minds of Himmler an incredibly important part of the process of rebuilding Germany or reforging Germany. And Himmler also knew that the alumni of the camp system, the SS men that graduated from it, would have a much, much bigger role when it came to Hitler's next war. They would be the men and women who would instill order not just in Germany, but beyond. Some prisoners had to wait weeks to find out how they would be punished, and obviously this was a kind of a deeply psychologically traumatic experience for them as well. And the camps for much of the 1930s are still in their infancy. They're still in an experimental phase. Theodor Eich was more than happy for SS men to behave brutally. He was an extraordinarily brutal man himself. But he said that this could not be condoned, or couldn't it be seen to be condoned, or, and I quote, "or we would run the risk of being described by the Ministry of the Interior of the German Reich as incapable of dealing with prisoners." So the jury was out in certain parts of the Nazi regime as to whether the camps were doing any good at all, and as to whether they were doing their intended purpose of restoring order and transforming prisoners into ideal German citizens. It was impossible for the regulations to stamp out the violence of the SS. The SS guards saw it as essential to the job and something that they had really signed up to do. Many SS men believed that they were still waging the war that had been fought up to 1933 on the streets of Germany against the left, against those that they believed would undermine Germany, and the idea that they should be treating the prisoners with kid gloves was something of an anathema to them. So they continued and found ways around the regulations to torment prisoners and to make regular punishments much worse, flogging prisoners more than they had been told to. And this was given the kind of a nod and a wink by permission by their superiors, who also broke the rules when they felt like it. The way that the prisoners behind the wire were viewed was as an enemy against whom a war was being waged, and insubordination could be in the offing at any point. Insubordination was the only weapon that the prisoners had against the guards, and therefore the guards in the camps knew that at any point, if they did break the rules, if they did act too brutally, then they could probably get away with it, with the justification that they were doing what it took in order to win this battle or in order to keep the system safe. The camp could justifiably put almost anything down to an act of necessity. And that is why in most cases, when prisoner abuses happened and prisoners were beaten or killed, that the SS guards would report what had happened as an act of self-defence. So this meant prisoner abuse was sanctioned only or disciplined only in exceptional circumstances. The example of Paul Zeidler, who had been mentioned in Eich's newsletter, was Zeidler wasn't expelled for torturing a prisoner, as Eich had claimed. The real crime, as far as the Zeidler's superiors were concerned, was that he had let himself be caught. Zeidler and his colleagues had murdered a prisoner, Friedrich Weissler, in 1937, but a routine investigation of the camps had uncovered this, and Weissler, who had been a part of the German Confessing Church, and his crime that had wound him up in the camps as he had written a letter of complaint to Hitler, his murder was reported in German church circles, and he was also a former judge. So these two factors made it more likely that the authorities, the judiciary, would investigate Weissler's murder. The message to Zeidler was that SS men who are that stupid really don't deserve to wear the uniform. And probably this had an effect on other SS men, encouraging them to pick more low-profile targets for their sadistic brutality. The SS stood by Zeidler for a period of time, but when it looked as if the rest of the Sachsenhausen administration might be queried and the Sachsenhausen itself might be drawn into the scandal, Zeidler was dismissed. And so the sacrifices that Zeidler made kept the rest of the system working as it was designed to. Now, it's interesting in all of this that Hitler's name rarely gets mentioned. Hitler was able to keep himself at arm's length from all of these developments. Not only was Hitler disinterested in the day-to-day workings of anything like the camp system or other aspects of the German state. He was very adept at waving away official papers for him to sign or to look at or to read, and said ultimately his view of the Führer principle was that these things could, the workings of state were best off left to mere functionaries, and he was not there to engage with such matters. Instead, he was there to inspire. He was there for ordinary Germans to look up to and to be led by. Hitler's view of these matters was that if they were left alone, they would pretty much resolve themselves. So he rarely took an involvement or an interest in what was happening inside the camps. Hitler also liked plausible deniability. One of the things that Hitler never did was, except in a couple of very rare cases, was put his signature to official documents and papers, particularly anything relating to state repression. He did not wish to be pinned down on any of these kinds of demands and instructions. Instead, Hitler was happy to delegate to Himmler somebody whom, until the end of the war, he trusted implicitly, and saw Himmler and himself as having shared values and ideas. The working of the camp system was just one part of Hitler's overall vision for transforming Germany from taking what he viewed as a kind of a weak and ill-disciplined Germany, one that had really failed in its historic mission, and transforming it into something far more robust, far more capable of being able to fight the next war. So it's interesting when we talk about Hitler's views of fighting the next war and what the SS believed that they were doing. Many SS believed that the next war had begun in 1933, and the first war had begun in 1933, and that was the war on Germany itself, and it was a war on what Hitler had described as social ballast. Not just the communists, but those that did not fit into the Nazi view of society. Those who were considered to be asocial, those who were work shy or lived alternative or bohemian lifestyles, those who were addicted, those who were criminal or deviant. The people who were not going to be part of Hitler's vision of the future. So, the camp system, as we are finding out more and more about it through these podcasts, contains all sorts of unexpected paradoxes when it comes to order and the creation of rules and regulations. But there are, if you look at the Soviet camps, all sorts of similar unexpected paradoxes. Part of this is to do with the authoritarian and dictatorial states that emerge in the 20th century that contain strange paradoxes and contradictions of their own. Anyway, I'm going to finish there, but just a reminder that we're funded through a trickle of advertising revenue, but also the generosity of you guys, the listeners. So if anyone can contribute to the Patreon page, I'm going to put a link down below and some cool stuff on there already. And hopefully I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.